just a moment or two to talk about my work with Taunton Team Chaplaincy. Some of my team are appearing here before you on the screen, chaplains of the church at work. There are about 23 chaplains now. I'm the paid lead chaplain. I'm paid 4 days a week by the trustees to lead the team. The majority are lay people, like you, who work as chaplains, give a few hours a week, and one or two of them are also ordained ministers as well, as is Grace, on the front row there. Chaplains in the workplace. Over the last 3 or 4 years, what we've been doing is serving the major employers in Taunton, your county town. And chaplains will go in for half a day a week into some major businesses. As you can see, some of them are on the screen. There's Asda and Debenhams. County Hall has a chaplain, the police and Sainsbury's, and UK Hydrographic Office, which is a major employer with about 1,000 people there. And we also serve the Royal Marines through 440 volunteers and so on. That's just a feel for the sort of businesses that we're in. And you know, people, when I talk about them becoming chaplain, their first reaction is, I couldn't do that. But what I'm incredibly proud of my team because they are so varied in their Christian experience and also their life experience. And they are different personalities, but it's amazing how God has fitted them to the type of chaplaincy that they're doing. And, you know, you've got some people who are extremely quiet individuals, not like me. And they'll go into their workplace, and people love them to bits because they are fantastic listeners. One of the big things about being a chaplain is the ability to listen. I have to tell myself that every day. Not only are chaplains in the workplace, but something that's happened recently has changed us. The model we're working to, we're also chaplains on the street. Really, in the last few weeks, we've opened a market in the office in the Market House. If you know Taunton, the Market House is that big building right in the centre. And at the end of that, we have an office which the council has granted us on a very short-term basis. But we have an office which we've kitted out. And now you'll begin to see people on the street which bear a sign on their clothing, like here, a town centre chaplain. And we will be engaging not only with businesses in the county town on the main street, but the people, the community of the town centre, and the people that come there who are quite needy at times. They come and spend, I met one recently, a lady who spends pretty well every day walking the streets of Taunton because she's so lonely. There's nothing at home for her. She just needs to be around people. So she's a regular who drops into our office. So we're now chaplains on the street as town centre chaplain. But to make sure the office runs, we have chaplains in the office. Now, you notice that. Oops, we seem to have jumped on there for some reason. It's not administrators I need in the office. I need people who are filled with the Spirit, who are like the chaplains on the street or chaplains in the workplace. They, too, are chaplains. They're trained as chaplains so that when somebody comes off the street, they're going to meet them where they are and meet their need, whatever that need may be, through Christ. And so we have chaplains in the office, so chaplains on the street, chaplains in the workplace, chaplains in the office. We also are people of prayer. We think it's fundamental to what we do that we're talking to the Lord about the work of chaplaincy in Taunton. And so we have people who are called friends of chaplains, friends and prayer partners, and you might like to choose to be one. Friends get a preview copy of our newsletter before we go to press for the newsletter. Actually, you get one before. They're available. Regular prayer bulletins every 2 or 3 weeks, just bringing you prayers of the people about the people we meet. It's a confidential thing. We don't give you names and addresses. We just tell you that T needs a prayer, whose wife is seriously ill, or whatever. There are humongous prayer needs, and we bring those to you through regular prayer bulletins. If we're changing vision or we feel God's showing us a new vision, we share it with you. Invitation to our business carol service. We're packed out on, I think it's Tuesday the 18th this coming year, we'll have our business carol service where we invite the people of the business community and our friends to come along. And last year it was packed out. You know, the manager of Boots the Chemist was asked to speak about chaplaincy. It was a risky thing to do because I'm not aware that he is a Christian believer. But you couldn't have scripted it better for him. He spoke about his need for support as a manager of a business. He said, I can't be everywhere all the time, but I know I've got the support of a chaplain who comes and talks to my staff. And he said, he gave an example where a spouse had died of one of the staff, and whilst the welfare department of Boots had done their thing, after a period of time it ceases. But he says 6 months later, our chaplain is still walking with the member of staff. We have a way day as a team. You'll be invited to come. And what joy, come to our annual general meeting. Actually, I tell you what, we had the Bishop of Taunton come. We had a fantastic service and an AGM. The AGM was about that much, and the rest of it was like this. We kept the AGM real short. And we have a summer garden party in the vicarage in St. Mary Magdalene, Taunton. And in fact, this last one was the opening of our office in Taunton. And Jeremy Brown, our MP, came along. You know what? When he spoke, you'd have thought he was a Christian. Seriously. He had a real bad chest. He was suffering. And he turned to me and said, Steve, what's this really all about? I said, it's the church that's left the building. That's what this is all about. And he then opened our office talking on the theme of the church that left the building. And he did it in such a wonderful way. Anyone passing by would have thought, Jeremy Brown's a Christian believer. But that's MPs for you. They can talk, can't they? But I believe God's got his hands on his life. You get a welcome badge and a pack and a lapel badge if you join our friends. Okay, so over there you can sign up to becoming a friend, and there's some bookmarks just to carry away with you to remind us in prayer. So, chaplains visiting businesses, chaplains in the office, chaplains on the street, friends and prayer partners, are you ready to join us? Could you be a chaplain? I want to talk about chaplaincy in Wellington to somebody, but nobody's listening. Yes, they are. But it's just that it may be just what you need to have somebody as a town centre chaplain here. We'd be glad. Actually, we'd be glad to partner with you in that. If somebody said they'd like to do it, we could do the training and support and all the rest of it. Chaplains are the church that's left the building. Wonderful quote, that. Wasn't mine. I wish I could say that's my quote. Chaplains are the church that's left the building. It was actually a Methodist chaplain who came up with that. But I think it's just spot on. And that's what Jeremy Brown was saying. You know, we're often worrying about the state of the roofs of our churches, and we can be very inward-looking as church people, but it's about the church that's left the building. That's what chaplaincy is about. Okay, good. As I say, you can sign up to become a friend, talk to me about becoming a chaplain, and there is a conversation to be had about providing a chaplaincy to the town centre of Wellington. Okay. Let's talk about the passage which we read earlier from Mark chapter 10. And I have to keep this brief. What I like about this passage of the healing of blind Bartimaeus is, if you put it in its proper context, it's such a blessing. It really is a blessing. And I encourage us, when we're reading scripture, to try and get the context, the background of what we're reading, and it comes up trumps. It really brings the passage alive when we see the context. So we have Bartimaeus, a blind man. You remember contextually when the disciples saying to Jesus about another blind man who sinned. So if you were blind and a beggar in Israel, you were the lowest of the low. And somebody in your family must have done something real bad so that you copped it. You were born blind. That's a contextualization of that. Jesus, if you read this story, you can read it, three out of the four Gospels cover this story in one way or another. And you get the sense that Jesus was in Jericho, not just passing through, but he spent some time there just around that before he moved on. And so I believe that, I'm going to say that Bartimaeus probably heard Jesus speak, got a sense of who he was about. And so I'm going to guess it was early in the morning. It says a large group of people were gathered there, making their way to Jerusalem. Now, there's a huge amount of context here if you think about it. Why was there a large group? You showed a slide, Christine, of the Judean wasteland. And 2,000 years ago, that was bandit country. And so to travel from Jericho up to Jerusalem at 21 miles, you would never go alone. You remember the story of the Good Samaritan? And when you did your trip, you may have stopped your bus at the inn of the Good Samaritan, I don't know if you did, but there's a lovely spot where, you know, this is where it's supposed to happen. Well, it's halfway down the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. And so you would not risk your skin setting off to go up to Jerusalem, 21 miles over that wasteland. You would gather in a large group of people for protection. Yeah, what I like about it is that Jesus was there, the Son of God, with all the power that he had. Really, there was no need for him to be personally concerned about being robbed on the way up to Jerusalem, I don't think. But God became man and lived amongst us as a man. He did what men did. He came alongside them where they were. And for them, they needed to be in a group that was secure. Large group. Where were they going? They were going to Jerusalem. Okay. But there was a special reason why they were going to Jerusalem. Can you remember what happens a week later? What is happening in Jerusalem a week later than this story? Really important time in the Jewish calendar. Anyone getting this? Passover, thank you. And so the group would have consisted not just of, should we say, Jericho Jews, but actually people from across the Middle East area, Syria, Iraq, or what is now currently Syria and Iraq, people from those large areas who perhaps were making a once-in-a-lifetime journey up to Jerusalem. Imagine how they were. They'd obviously saved up some money, prepared themselves to meet the Lord in the temple of Jerusalem, quite excited, and, you know, it's like us when we go off on a Christian conference. We've got that sense of expectation of something that God will do when we get there. And so we're gathered in this hubbub, this group of people. And think of, and get this. You're one of those people. You're heading up to Jerusalem. You're wanting to meet God in the temple. Who's there? Who's with them? It's Jesus. But they can't spot him for who he is. It's not revealed to them. So in the midst of them, God, the triune God, Jesus the Son, is in the middle of the group. Their hearts and minds, many of them, for the very first time perhaps in their life for some of them, have made a long journey to go up to meet with God in Jerusalem. And there is God already in the midst. There's something there, isn't there? God is in the midst of his people. In this church this morning, on the streets of Wellington, in Taunton, God is in the midst. We may be looking here, there, and everywhere for God, but he's present with us. But they were kept from seeing him. Think about Jesus in context now. He had sufficient prior knowledge that he had told his disciples, if you look back in the chapter just leading up to this, that he would be arrested, he would be badly treated, he would be crucified and then raised on the third day. Jesus was in the midst, but he had a lot on his mind. Think about it. The pressure that he would have been under as he stood in that group of people. He was going to die for the sins of the whole world, and yet even those physically close to him could not see who he was. Oh, they could see physically. He looked like a rabbi, because I think that's how he would have dressed with his group of disciples. And isn't this true, what Paul said? He said that the enemy's blinded the eyes of the unbeliever. You see, I would say, if you and I, in a time capsule, or whatever you call it, time thing, travel, went back 2,000 years, and we stood in that group, we would like to say that we would know. After the Spirit, we would know Christ. Would we? Would you? Interesting thought, isn't it? Would you just be like the rest of the guys? looking for an experience of God, but actually not recognizing that he was right there in the presence of Jesus. Just a thought. Because we tend to think if we'd have been around Jerusalem and Israel 2,000 years ago, we would have been there with Jesus. We're with you, Jesus. We know all about who you are and all the rest. When we witness to who Christ is to our neighbors, to our workplace colleagues, or to whoever we meet, our family, what we need to pray is that their eyes are open to who Jesus is. Because frankly, their eyes are totally closed. You know, what you're telling me is about a man who was a good man, who did some miracles, that's fine, blah, blah. But I don't see it. I don't see who this Jesus is. And when I'm doing chaplaincy work, I am always praying, Lord, open their eyes. My job as a town centre chaplain is equally exciting and disappointing. I am doing both of those things at the same time. Because I meet with people and I so want to share Christ with them, and I so want to see Jesus move in their lives and lift their burdens off them, and yet they're closed to me. And I go away so disappointed. But God, I was in prayer the other morning, this is a total aside, and the Lord said, I haven't called you to disappointment, I've called you to service. Stop with the disappointment. It's a human nature thing to be disappointed, but don't give your time to it. Give your time to what you're called to do, which is to serve. Anyway, back to the story. So Jesus is in the midst. We've got a guy who's blind, a beggar, who's the lowest of the low. We've got a bunch of people who are desperate to get to Jerusalem, not only to meet with God in the temple, but guess what? The numbers of people in Jerusalem swells hugely. And there's a burden on the hotels. And so those guys are setting out on their journey and want to get on to Jerusalem in order to get a room to somewhere to stay during Passover. So they're desperate to move on. Okay. So whoever is in charge of this lot says, let's go. We're going to Jerusalem. Try and keep up. And as they begin the journey, lots of noise, Bartimaeus says, who's coming? And they say, Jesus of Nazareth. Now, I think Bartimaeus has already heard Jesus speak. This blind beggar sitting on the side of the road. And he starts to shout out. And he shouts out, Jesus of Nazareth, have mercy upon me. No, he doesn't. Read it. Doesn't say that at all. He says, gives a messianic term. Jesus, son of David, have mercy upon me. See, blind Bartimaeus can see. Amongst all those people, some religious people, some people like you and me, ordinary everyday folks, are on a journey up to Jerusalem to meet with God. And the blind beggar says, I've seen him. I've seen him. He's here. He's now. Jesus, son of David, have mercy upon me. Fantastic. I ran a marathon once. Don't laugh, because I don't look like a man who runs marathons. I was in the army. I was based in Germany. And when you start a marathon, two things. One is you've got to stay at your own pace. There's a lot of excitement. Everyone goes charging off. And I did the same. I thought, I can't keep this up. So I backed off and people were flying past me. Whew. But later, as I kept my steady pace that I'd been training for, I was passing dozens of them because they set off in such a rush. But one thing I know, if somebody had stopped as that marathon sped off in the beginning and tried to stop the crowd, there'd have been mayhem and injury and all sorts and so on. So I can't imagine when Bartimaeus is calling out. And when he's not getting a hearing, he calls out even louder. And Jesus stops. What mayhem that must have been like. Look, we've got to get to Jerusalem. I'm hoping that I've got news of a hotel room I want to get into. I want to get settled in. It's 21 miles. It'll take us all day. It's going to be blisteringly hot. This is early in the morning, of course. I'm guessing now, because you wouldn't go up there in the midday sun, as it were. We need to press on. And Jesus said, no. Jesus has a weakness. Before you turn and stone me, seriously, Jesus finds the cry of faith irresistible. And that's what he was hearing from Bartimaeus. He was hearing the cry of faith. And he had no, it's as though he had no choice but to stop. Think about this. Jesus had on his mind the cruel arrest and torture and crucifixion for the sins of the whole world. That was upon his mind. One would have been forgiven for saying that Jesus would have said, I'll get one of my disciples to come and visit you later. I need to press on because there's much for me to do in Jerusalem. I know what awaits me. But because of the cry of faith of a blind beggar, Jesus has to stop. Jesus is passing by today. Have you got faith to cry out to him? Not the faith of someone who says, there's a man called Jesus of Nazareth, a good prophet, a rabbi, a good man, but actually Jesus, son of David, the Messiah. And so, as we know the story so well, Jesus stops, calls him, Bartimaeus, to him. Little aside there where he throws off his cloak. People often think about that cloak as being, it would have been his whole wealth. In fact, he slept in his cloak and it protected him against the sun and so on. So to throw that off was to say, I'm coming with nothing to Jesus. And that's how we need to come to Jesus as well. Coming with nothing, just as I am, without one plea, as the song is always sung at Billy Graham rallies, if you remember those years ago. And so Jesus draws him there to him and he says, the question's like what the Americans call a no-brainer. What do you want me to do for you? A bit strange, isn't it, really? Question. Here am I, a blind man, and Jesus wants me to say what I need from him. It's a bit obvious, but I'm going to put a twist on this just momentarily. It's obvious that he wants to see, and that's what he asked for. But actually, the guy has already got huge vision because he can see God. And actually, Jesus wouldn't have been surprised if the blind man had not asked for healing for his sight, actually, but actually said, I just want to be where you are, God. If I have an affliction, if I have an illness, if I have a disability, of course I want to be healed. But if I can see who Jesus is, I want to be with him more than I want to be healed. Does that make sense? But the reality is, so Jesus was quite willing to hear a different request. I only saw that recently. I've always thought, well, it's a no-brainer. Jesus wants to hear from his mouth exactly what the man wants. He wants to hear the voice of faith again. In other words, I know you can heal me, therefore I want my sight. But I think Jesus would have been willing to hear a different answer. You're God, I want to be with you. And so we know healing takes place. Jesus says, go, your faith has made you whole. But the man doesn't go. Why would he want to go anywhere but with Jesus? And he goes with Jesus in the way, rejoicing and so forth. Now, just as I finish, that journey must have been amazing. All these people hungry for God suddenly find amongst them there's been a magnificent healing. Here's the guy with us. He's been healed. He's got no problems with his sight anymore. What sort of journey would that have been like? It's not recorded, but I can't help feeling that it would be an amazing journey, wouldn't it? Now tell me again who you are, Jesus of Nazareth. What was that all about, the healing? And so 21 miles of conversation, of excitement. And perhaps people be even more prepared to meet their God in the temple. Or maybe many of them said, I've actually met him in Jesus. Final comment. When they came, remember, in the same kind of journey time, or at least maybe the following morning, they come down over the Mount of Olives, where you were. We now see contextualized why they were so excited. Because of what happened back there on the edge of Jericho. You know, it wasn't just a question of a few disciples whipping up the crowd. The folks in that journey had seen what had happened, and that's why they worshipped Jesus. Jesus is passing by. Let's find words of faith and meet with him. So we're going to sing. Bill, are we going to sing?